Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tuesday night, it is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am Chris Featherstone, representing Crave Wrestling, always with my wonderful, esteemed Pancakes and Power Slams co-host, Derek. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is.
I'm here. Is everyone else out there here? Because this is where you should be. This is the place to be, Tuesday night, 11 o'clock. Wrestling talk. This is the place to be. Why would anyone be anywhere else, Chris? Why?
I have no clue, especially the amazing trivia and the wrestling talk that we have for 90 minutes and just the Flavor of the Week episodes that we have, the Flavor of the Week topics that we have, the gritty, no-nonsense wrestling talk that we have. If you want to know about no cookie cutters, no fluff. If you want to know about professional wrestling and how real and real opinions about professional wrestling, this is the place to be. Pancakes and Power Slams, Tuesday night, episode 97, Derek. 97 episodes.
97. What was happening in wrestling in 1997? Let's take a quick look
1997, we had the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin. We had his he won his first Royal Rumble in 1997. Actually, WrestleMania 13, right when he lost against Bret Hart. When he lost against Bret Hart, WrestleMania 13.
He was the Ken special Shamrock guest referee.
Ken Shamrock was the special referee.
That's an intern. Stop feeding answers.
I'll beat you to it. It was a great year in professional wrestling, actually, and it was really the D-Generation X was the rise of D-Generation X.
That was fantastic. That was probably my favorite year in wrestling. I mean, it was just the height, the start of what was to come in the next few years. Every week on Raw or Nitro was something spectacular.
Yes, absolutely. That was the, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because the Monday Night Wars was really hot in 97. That was a year into the NWO. So it was still relatively in its infancy. And it was amazing competition. And Eric Bischoff really, he really set the stage as far as really, really good competition. And we need that again, man. I mean, we just don't have that with wrestling these days. And TNA, you know,
no way.
It's a distant second. With the new advent of superstars that we're seeing, including what we saw last Thursday with the Wolves and MVP being the investor, we'll talk about that in just a few. I think that they have an opportunity. I mean, you still have Kurt Angle there, although he's incredibly banged up. Still have Bobby Roode there. He's a great wrestler. You still have James Storm. Gunner's a really good wrestler on the rise. So, yeah, I mean, well, I tell you what, though. They were in Glasgow, Scotland last Thursday, and that crowd in the Hydro Center was huge. It was amazing. And I understand, and I wrote this on the Impact Wrestling Report, the review that I do every week. I understand that many people's families live in the States, and that's on the TNA roster, and I understand that family comes first. But I would say that more pay-per-views should be held overseas. And Derek and I are calling from the United States. We're airing live from the United States. And we understand that people from outside the States listen to this show and you know, read the articles and things like that. I would support having more shows, as TNA, having more shows overseas, because that crowd was huge. And compared to the few hundred people that they have here when they have it in Orlando, Florida, and their house shows in the States are not good at all. So, I mean, there was one a few weeks ago that was in a high school gym, and I saw pictures of it, and it was like chair seating. The ring was about as half as big as the room was, and, I mean, that's not number two promotion whatsoever. So I'm holding on to TNA. I hope that they do well. Wrestling needs that type of competition, though. They need it for Vince McMahon. I'll tell you what, for Vince McMahon to thrive and the creative team to thrive the way that they did back in 97, 98, the Attitude Era, they need competition. Period. They need that type of competition. And if they don't have that competition, we'll get lousy booking. I mean, we've gotten lousy booking for a number of years, and we'll continue to get lousy booking. But we'll continue to get lousy booking if there's no competition, though.
Yeah, there's no competition. If other than TNA, nobody else can rival with them. I like Ring of Honor more than I do TNA.
Yeah, I agree.
They cannot go against WWE,
and that's only
nobody can.
And that's only because WWE is an entity in and of itself, because they have the financial backing. And I'm surprised that SBG Sinclair Broadcasting Group, they own a lot of, I mean, they own a lot of Fox affiliates, and they bought out Ring of Honor. So I was expecting a better television deal, because before SBG bought him out, HDNet, Mark Cuban and HDNet, they bought out Ring of Honor, and their production on HDNet, because I remember watching on HDNet every week, their production on HDNet was much better than what we see from a bigger named company, a bigger money company. And SBG, so I don't know. I mean, their production is so horrible, though, with Ring of Honor. And I keep saying this, and I've said this many, many episodes within the 97. Their talent pool is the best in United States wrestling, period. Ring of Honor has the best talent pool. Because if you think about it, I mean, let's even go further back. People who came from Ring of Honor, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels. I just named five people that are big names in TNA and or WWE. So we got a comment here in the chat room, Jim Cornette would bring ROH to Vince's doorstep. I doubt that, because Jim
what?
Cornette had his chance.
Said that.
I doubt that.
That's crazy.
Some advocate of Jim Cornette.
I love Jim Cornette, but I don't see him being the next Eric Bischoff.
Someone must be watching the show. Well, someone must be listening to the show weekly and is a fan of Derek with his Jim Cornette references. But Jim Cornette, he had his chance. He was like a – he was called the executive producer. That's who he was. He was called the executive producer of ROH, which – you know, in layman's terms, is like a general manager, ambassador role. But he really didn't revive the company. You know, Jim Cornette is so stuck in traditional wrestling that, you know, Jim Cornette's booking style is so pro 1989. It's not pro 1989.
It's production
exactly.
quality, but no, he's
exactly.
not. Okay, well, he's not the owner of ROH, but give it to him. Let him dabble with it. Let him work with it.
He already did. He was with ROH for years.
Yeah. Well, he, look what he had to work with. But anyway,
he had
Jim Herd.
What?
Bad.
He
it's
had
not.
Christopher Daniels to work with. He had Austin Aries to work with.
I didn't make the comment.
He had the Wolves to work with, Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. He had an amazing array of talent to work with when he was in ROH.
There's
absolutely no way.
Politics hurt wrestling just as much as anything else.
I was helping out
the dude in the chat room. So it's not a bad idea. It's a hopeful idea. I like Jim Cornette, but no, it's not believable.
Jim Cornette, no, Jim Cornette.
But
if you want to keep talking about it, then. like I said, he's one of the best. You know, he's one of the best. Voices, non-wrestling voices in pro wrestling history, but his booking style is very traditional. All right, let's go to the first trivia question, and that is Nikita Koloff's finisher was called what? Nikita Koloff's finisher was called what? It wasn't the Ghetto Blaster. And
that was a good finishing move. Too bad you don't see that too much anymore.
Yeah, the Ghetto Blaster, the Ghetto Blaster was just a glorified Enziguri. That's all it was. It was hilarious.
It was quick,
though.
It was effective. It was kind of like Sweet Chin Music, just all of a sudden, bam!
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I've mentioned this before on the show before. I like those snappy moves. I think that snappy moves like that, like the RKO and the Sweet Chin Music, and any type of spear, well executed spear. I think that's one of the reasons why Goldberg. I would even throw Roman Reigns in there. His spear is really good. Edge's spear was just no. It was a hug. Drop is what it was. I call his spear the hug drop. And
I see that. Yeah, you're right.
But it still worked for him though. I didn't like it, but I mean it worked for him. The hug drop worked for him. So I like catchy moves like that. And you do make a good point as far as the Ghetto Blaster. It definitely was a good. It was a snappy move. And I think that it was a glorified Enziguri, but it worked for Bad News Brown at the time. Flavor of the Week episode, we will continue our WrestleMania series. This week we will talk about probably I would say the greatest WrestleMania of all time as far as popularity is concerned, as far as a colossal... a colossal just feel to it. Of course, that's WrestleMania 3 in the Pontiac Silverdome. And we also will talk about WrestleMania 4. So WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 4 for the Flavor of the Week. Again, just like we did with the Royal Rumble, We talked about Royal Rumble from 1988 all the way to 2013, and we also talked about 2014 at the Royal Rumble. And this year we will do the same thing with WrestleMania. We will talk about all 29 WrestleManias heading into WrestleMania 30, the first week of April. And I am so happy to tease something. Good question in the chat room. WrestleMania 3 was the best WrestleMania. What was the second best? Real quick before I make my announcement, I think the best all-around WrestleMania was WrestleMania 17. I think WrestleMania 3 was the best promoted WrestleMania of all time. Hogan and Andre was the biggest WrestleMania match of all time to me. But I think the best all-around WrestleMania was WrestleMania 17, Rock versus Austin. Austin makes his heel turn, aligns with Vince McMahon. I think that was just the build behind Austin Rock, just everything that just swarmed around that build was just amazing to me. WrestleMania 17 was the best of all time to me. What about you, Derek?
It's hard to say. I mean, I want to say WrestleMania 3 as well, because you got Ricky the Dragon Steamboat Macho Man, which is arguably the best match of all time. I mean, it's just.
Absolutely.
But then you've got WrestleMania 4. That was just as great with the tournament they had. WrestleMania 5 and the Mega Powers exploded. And then, I mean, when you want to think of a more recent, Rock versus Hogan. I mean, that was just so much.
Yeah, 18. Yeah. 18.
I wasn't the biggest 18. Fan of the match at the time, but looking back, it's like, wow, that was just absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Past
man.
Versus and, present.
And it was in Toronto. And the Toronto crowd was just absolutely amazing. I mean, they marked out so hard for Hulk Hogan. And Hogan was a heel at the time. He was with the NWO, made their return at No Way Out that year in February.
Right.
And then, I mean, that led to a Rock versus Hogan match. Hogan came in the match as a heel. And it was just, you talk about your double turn for one night. Rock was just... He was the biggest heel in the house that night, and Hogan was just, I mean, his ovation at WrestleMania 18 was one of the biggest ovations of all time. And I would say probably top three, one of the top three biggest ovations of all time. That Toronto crowd is very pro Hulk Hogan. So I would say 18 as far as colossal match. Rock Hogan, I totally agree with you. 18, as far as 18.
Special 14? I think a special shout-out to WrestleMania 14 with Tyson being involved. I mean, just the hype behind Michaels and Austin. I mean, to me, that was, for me, that was the biggest WrestleMania that, in my memory, that I was so anticipated to see. WrestleMania 3, of course, but I was like 6 years old, so, you know. But as far as the adolescent Derek goes, WrestleMania 14 to me was the enterprise.
The baddest man on the planet.
Oh, that was awesome. The build up to that when Austin came out on Monday Night Raw back in January before that and told Tyson to get lost. I mean, that was just. Wow.
Yeah. I would agree with you. 14 was a really good build up. And it was
Kane
good.
And Undertaker.
I would say though that the undercard matches in those pay-per-views weren't all that good though. As we go through the WrestleMania series, we'll get to the undercard matches, each undercard match, but especially
no more
18.
Spoilers.
I mean, no more spoilers. I agree with you, but I will say this before we go on, that Jericho and Triple H, there's an exception to every rule, because I'm a big fan of having the title matches in pay-per-views. Period. I understand. I'm a traditionalist. Derek and I, we're still traditionalists when it comes to wrestling. We still value the prestige of the world titles. And I think that world titles should end pay-per-views. I do understand, though, that when you get to WrestleMania, it's a different breed. Now you have Taker's streak that's just as big as a title match. So having Taker in WrestleMania, I'm cool with that too. But at that point in time, Hogan Rock did not even close WrestleMania 18. As much as everybody knows I'm a huge Jericho fan. He's my favorite in the WWE. But Jericho Triple H closed 18. And they've both said in documentaries that was a bust. I mean, the match was good, but the fans were so exhausted from Hogan and Rock that they really couldn't put much of anything left in Triple H and Jericho. And it was anticlimactic, and it was just not the positioning of that match was not very good that year. Again, I'm a big fan of title matches, closing shows, but that year, probably Rock Hogan should have closed the show. I will say that. So I don't think that Rock Cena should have closed the show 2 years ago. Last year I'm fine with, because it was for the title. 2 years ago, it was just the big match and they closed the show, no title involved. And
just for giggles.
I wasn't a big fan of that at all. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we shall. And because 2 years ago, the WWE title match was CM Punk and Jericho, and that was a good match. So that actually should have closed the match. That should have actually closed WrestleMania. And that was CM Punk's moment of closing WrestleMania. He always wanted the main event WrestleMania to be the last match. His closest moment was 2 years ago when he was the WWE champion and he went against Chris Jericho. That would have been a good closer. But Rock and Cena beat him to it. And speaking of CM Punk, the guy quits. We'll get to that as well. And ladies and gentlemen, I am so pleased to announce a little teaser. I do have to let you know that next week we have a big announcement heading into the 100th episode. And just so fittingly, the 100th episode falls on the same week as the Elimination Chamber the aftermath of the Elimination Chamber, as well as the WWE Network launching. So you got Sunday with the Elimination Chamber, you got Monday the Network launching, and Tuesday you have the 100th episode of Pancakes and Power Slams. And so just a teaser, stay tuned to next week, got a big, big, big announcement. And I will say this, and this is all I'll say this week, and stay tuned next week for the big announcement. The hint of the announcement is we have a newest member of the Pancakes and Power Slams interview series that will be on for the 100th episode, and I'm sure that many people have some burning questions about this person. I'm not going to give away who it is, but I know that you want to listen to his reasoning for some decisions that he's made within the past year. So stay tuned, and we're going to have a fun time, great interview. We have a stacked lineup, so be sure to stay tuned for details going into the 100th episode. We got some people, we got some feature columnists coming from Bleacher Report to do a roundtable. We got Stomp the Host coming back, with Derek and I both being a part of Stomp the Host this time, as opposed to me last time. Yes, you would be.
I'm still trying to.
Be,
how come nobody knows the trivia answer yet? For crying out loud!
That is, Nikita Koloff's finishing move. That is still an open trivia question. But we have Stomp the Host. We have roundtable discussion. We have some more interaction. We're going to have the interview. We're going to have another return. We're going to have a fantastic return heading for episode 100. So an old voice you'll hear, and so be sure to stay tuned, and we're just going to have so much fun. So leading into WrestleMania, we're also going to have a contest, so stay tuned as far as who gets the most trivia heading into episode 100. So so much fun, so much in store for the 100th episode. Until then, let's make episode 97 the best that we can. Still open, what is Nikita Koloff's finishing? Okay, great job. Russian Sickle, we got it. The next question is, what year was the first Starrcade? What year was the first Starrcade? Live on the chat room, we got Twitter, tweet at Crave Wrestling. Those are your options to give the correct answer for the open question right now, which is, again, what year was the first Starrcade? We got in the chat room already, 1983. Great job. All right, let's get to Raw. Randy Orton in-ring promo, interrupted by Triple H and Stephanie, eventually schedules Orton versus Bryan on Raw and said that Randy Orton would have to go against everyone who was in the Elimination Chamber. I tell you what, I was just pondering on this today, actually. Randy Orton's WWE World Heavyweight Championship run, since he won it a month and a half ago, has been absolutely awful. Randy Orton is still stale. He is still unexciting, and he is not making, he's not bringing any zest to the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Now, mind you, they chose the minor pay-per-view, TLC, to unify the titles, and they really went with it. They unified the titles. They chose the minor pay-per-view to do it, TLC, and that ended up being a bad move because it's not as exciting, it's not as monumental as it should have been. And both of those titles have been around for over 2002, so over nearly a decade. But and to close that chapter in WWE history by having the titles unified, to do it at TLC and to go through with it was surprising. But to make matters worse, WWE has poorly booked Randy Orton as a champion. And I will say this, even if they poorly booked Randy Orton as a champion, Randy Orton, period, is just a lackluster champion. I am not buying his championship run whatsoever.
He's boring. He is so boring. And I think WWE knows that, but what are they doing with him? He's what you call a paper champion. I got that from Rocky movies, I believe. He is a paper champion. He is not a champion in the books. He won't be. No one's going to say, oh, Randy Orton was great. Remember Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage and Randy Orton. He'll never be in the same sentence or paragraph or book or lore as those guys. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic. I feel sorry for Randy Orton. I mean, I feel sorry. He's been booked improperly, and it's just really hurt his character. It's hurt him. I don't know if I could ever get behind Randy Orton just because of how pathetic he is. Not pathetic. I don't want to say that. He's got talent, but he doesn't bring that charisma.
Yeah, I agree. Randy Orton just don't – he does not have it, and I definitely think that we just need something better for WrestleMania 30. I mean, that's basically what it is. We need a better build. Batista Orton is just not going to work. Batista's a heel. I mean, he's a tweener. He had to cut a promo in Omaha during the commercial. A lot of people don't know this. But, of course, we report all this stuff on WrestlingInc.com. He had to cut a promo during a commercial in Omaha. They were in Omaha, Nebraska. He had to cut a promo during a commercial just to garner some pops. He was talking about their college and just trying to garner some cheap pops just because people, the Batista experiment is already a failure to me. And I know, you know, I will say this, Derek, as much as I was anticipating Batista to come back, as much as I was going to bat for him.
You were.
I definitely was. But I will say this, man, you are partially right as far as this run is concerned. Man, I'm just not on board. I'm not on board at all. And I don't know if it's this new look. I mean, I knew he had that look because I watched his MMA match and, of course, his acting. But there's just something about Batista that reeks trying out for one more time, but a good fit for 2014 WWE to me.
He's got a Randy Orton feel. He really does. Just like, here he is, but he's lackluster, and he just doesn't have it. And to me, my opinion, I don't think he ever did, but I know you had a lot of hype behind him. It's like you want Batista to do good, but it just doesn't happen. And or you just don't, it's not believable. So, yeah, the main event for WrestleMania, if that's what it's going to be, for crying out loud, if I spend money on that.
I think that you are not the only person that believes that, honestly. I don't think many people want to spend money on it. That's probably, I wonder if that's one of the reasons why they're going to put it on the network. Because, yeah, I definitely don't think that. But this is WrestleMania 30, though. This is the monumental WrestleMania. 30 years of WrestleMania. You better have no limits to the talent that you try to bring in. I know they try to bring in Goldberg, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Mr. T, Hogan.
Mr. T, I doubt that that's going to happen. I doubt that that's going to happen. But they may, though, because the WrestleMania 1 main event was rumored to be in the Hall of Fame. But I don't know. Hogan's pretty much a lock to come back for WrestleMania. They said that he won't be in a wrestling role, and I think that's a good idea, although I did want to see a leg drop. But they did say it is being reported that Hogan's role in WrestleMania 30 is most likely going to be a host, which I'm fine with. I think that's a good idea. 30 years, he was main event in WrestleMania 1. Him being a host at WrestleMania 30, it'll work. He'll get pops. He'll get the nostalgia pops, and he may even do a Hulk up moment and do a leg. You know, who knows? But he's not clear to do.
Of course he will.
He may not. But the thing is, he's not clear to do any type of wrestling, though. So,
I don't
know.
Back,
he's
in the Hall of Fame.
No,
Warrior
but
might be there.
That's a great question, because it's actually rumored that the Ultimate Warrior may go against Ryback at WrestleMania 30.
Ryback
to be he should be. I mean, he's definitely not. He's not exciting at all.
For nostalgic reasons, of course.
Yeah. Well, as far as Warrior's concerned, yeah. I mean, give him about 45 seconds and just do a squash match and against Ryback. I'm totally fine with that. So, I think Warrior. Warrior in a wrestling role, I might as well. Next, we had The Shield defeating Biggie Langston, Rey Mysterio, and Kofi Kingston. And of course, this is just to stir up their match that was confirmed on SmackDown, interestingly enough, that The Shield actually will go against the Wyatts. Now, it was rumored for WrestleMania at one time, and then they pulled it. I'm just not a fan of two heel factions going against each other. I knew that we were going to see this eventually, but just not a big fan of. I mean, I like The Shield. I like Roman Reigns. Well, I like Seth Rollins too. But I like The Shield. Fan of the Wyatts. But they're both heels, though. There's nothing. I mean, Roman Reigns is getting babyface pops, but Rollins and Ambrose are heels, and the Wyatt family are heels. So I understand that it's a filler match to put on the card, but I'm not too sold on the fact that you have the Shield versus the Wyatts. Two heel factions going against each other. And, of course, you know, this was to build up the Shield. However, why are they stopping the momentum of Big E Langston? It just despises me how the booking staff just gives up on the mid-carders. He revived the Intercontinental title. Now he's losing in six-man matches. I detest that. Not a big fan at all.
Yeah, not a big fan. I mean, you got heel versus heel, and the Wyatts have just been a lame duck since they've been with the WWE. The build-up is great. We say this so many times. And, you know, the Shield, they're going to break up eventually. Doggone it. It always happens, but it's going to happen, so let it happen at WrestleMania. Let the Wyatts be the benefactor. Not WrestleMania, I'm sorry. Elimination Chamber. So it's, come on. I don't really have a whole lot to say. I'm kind of tongue-twisted with it. And it's, the Wyatts could have been so much better. The Shield is great, and they're about ready to break up. I want to say one thing in the chat room. Someone said, bonus question, what's the subtitle for Starrcade 83? A Flare for the Gold.
A Flare for the Gold.
A Flare for the Gold.
Flair for the Goat, and he defeated Harley Race.
And he defeated Harley Race in what?
A steel cage
kind of
match. Steel cage.
Good job.
Yeah, I tell you, man. Come on, Derek. You know how good I am, man. It's really, really hard to stump
me. You have
me.
Your moments. You're good. The best journalist in wrestling, Chris Featherstone, Pancakes, Power Slams.
Indeed. Greatly appreciate it.
On Bleacher Report,
man.
Follow him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Follow me on Bleacher Report and Wrestling.com. Next, we have Christian defeating Jack Swagger. Christian, he's still got it, man. The guy's 40 years old, just about, and he still got it. But I tell you what, with Christian, though, this guy, he's been a phenomenal wrestler for so long. But he's never really had his moment. He had some very short World Heavyweight Championship reigns. He was the man in ECW, but what does that mean? So, he just turned 40, by the way, a little over 2 months ago. But you got a 40-year-old who still is amazing in the ring, and still, he won't have another moment. He's a filler in the Elimination Chamber, just like Antonio Cesaro is, but I'm happy that they at least gave him that opportunity. As far as Christian is concerned, awesome wrestler, but he's never had that moment. And for some reason, they chose Edge over Christian as far as being the, you know, a top guy. Christian's never had a top guy moment, and I always thought that Christian was a better wrestler than Edge was, and I also thought that Christian was better on the mic than Edge was too. But I guess there was a hunger. I guess there was a ferocity that Edge had to make him a good heel. He was a good heel, but Christian, I guess, didn't have that, and that's probably what kind of catapulted Edge over Christian. But as far as mic work and in-ring ability, I think that Christian is a better wrestler. Will he make the Hall of Fame? Unfortunately, I doubt it. And that's sad to me, because you think so? You think Christian would make the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to me, Christian,
under what credentials?
Under what credentials? He's just been such a mainstay. It's like saying that, you know, Gold Dust won't ever make the Hall of Fame. It's Christian. He's somebody like that I looked up to. I mean, he's a skinny white dude. He's in the professional wrestling. He's had such a solid career. he's never had his big moment, but, I mean, he's everybody knows that watches WWE knows who Christian is. I mean, he's kind of like a, I don't want to say like an Owen Hart, but almost he's just somebody that everybody is captivated by, even though he's never going to have his biggest moment that he deserves, but he's always been there. He's there. He's Christian. I can see why they picked Edge over him. Edge had the bigger build. Edge was taller. Edge had more of a character, but you know, I mean, Christian was always kind of like the little brother. And that's how everyone's going to always perceive him as an underdog, but I think he's going to get his due. Not so much now, but he'll be in the Hall of Fame, of course.
I hope so.
I totally think he will be.
I hope so, but I doubt it, man. I mean, of course, everybody says, you know, if Coco Beware can be in the Hall of Fame, I guess that's, you know, the continually.
And the gobbledygooker.
No, well, he's
not
the
not to compare him to. I think he is,
yeah.
Isn't he? Yeah, anyway,
gobbledygooker.
Christian, he's like a minor Chris Jericho. He's like almost. He was at the cusp of something that could be really awesome, but didn't happen. But it happened to Jericho and Edge. So.
Yeah, I think that actually, I think that's a really good assessment on that. Actually, I think that. Yeah, he was a step. He was a really small step behind Edge and Chris Jericho. Yeah, I agree. I would actually throw Eddie Guerrero in there as well. A small step behind those three, and they ascended. They made it, but Christian just didn't make it, man. And I hope that he makes the Hall of Fame. But I just don't think he will. He's actually one of my favorites, but I'm not too sure.
He's an honorable mention. He's an honorable mention within
top
10 wrestlers. He is an honorable mention. He's
no
always
doubt.
Showed up.
He's
always put on a great match. He's been there since 97, I think. And this is the 97th episode. 98, maybe.
Indeed. There you go.
It's the Brood. Who is this guy? Who's the skinny white kid that, you know, he's like
came in as a light heavyweight champion his first match. So
Indeed.
I think that like I said, you know, I'd put him in there for sure, but I don't think that he'll make it, man. It's sad to say that, but sad. Yeah, but he beat Taka Michinoku. 98 is when he came in. He beat Taka Michinoku in 98. We're talking about Owen Hart. Speaking of Owen Hart, I got a tweet this evening that's the WWE Network will be showing Over the Edge of 1999, and that's quite controversial because we know what happened at Over the Edge 1999. Unfortunately,
kind of disturbing.
That was the death of Owen Hart. Unfortunately, so I mean, hey, that's in their archives, and they have every right to show it if they choose. Although it is a very touchy subject, and always will be. Two things that will always be a touchy subject is the death of Owen Hart and Chris Benoit. Those are the two things that would always be a touchy subject. And just wrestling from now until eternity, those are the two touchiest subjects of pro wrestling history. And then you have honorable mentions of who killed Bruiser Brody and did Jimmy Snuka really kill his girlfriend. So those are some touchy subjects, man. And, you know, I'm sure someone will write about them and
the Montreal
stir some controversy. Montreal screw job is definitely definitely in the top three, but it's not as – I mean, yeah, it's pretty touchy. It's a pretty controversial subject.
It is, but it didn't involve anyone's life, so it's –
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like, you know – It wasn't like morbid or anything like that. So, yep, absolutely. Very interesting subjects there. New Age Outlaws defeats Cody Rhodes and Goldust in a steel cage match. I knew that this match was going to be good. Not necessarily from the New Age Outlaws end, but more from the Rhodes Brothers end. And that moonsault spot that he did, he really got some fame doing it a few weeks back in Madison Square Garden at a house show. So he did it again, and it was a really, really nice spot. He barely even touched Road Dogg. It was like a grave.
That was a botch.
Yeah.
That was...
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, not necessarily. Not on Rhodes' end. I think that Road Dogg was too afraid to really.
Either one.
I won't say that. I won't say that on Cody's end because the moonsault was very nicely executed. But for us wrestling fans, we know that a spot needs to be properly executed by both people. And the Road Dogg, he basically looked at Cody, was like, "Oh no, I'm not going to partake of that." And he kind of stepped over a little bit, and he didn't take the bump. I mean, Cody Rhodes took almost the entire bump on that, and that's not good for being that far up from the cage, and it could have went a lot worse than what it really was. I mean, Cody Rhodes. It was more like a moonsault punch because he really kind of punched Road Dogg, kinda. But that it could have went a lot worse. But thankfully there was no major injuries and it ended out that way. I just don't like the New Age Outlaws being champs for this. I mean, it's been too long. It's only been 2 weeks, but that's 2 weeks too long. And what's been a week, actually, because they won at the Royal Rumble almost a week and a half ago. But too long for me. I hope that they lose it at the Elimination Chamber. I don't want to see them go into WrestleMania as champions. I think that this nostalgia run is, I mean, I like the New Age Outlaws. I like the fact that they still have it. But I think the nostalgia run is, it's expired, and as tag team champions, I don't know. And it really kind of diminishes the steam that Cody Rhodes and Goldust had. I think that if we get anything out of this, we may get some type of Rhodes Brothers winning a tag team number one contenders match, having one more chance at Elimination Chamber against the New Age Outlaws. And then maybe we'll get a turn from either Rhodes brother leading into a match against WrestleMania. I can see that happening, and I guess that'll be fine. Although I really like the Rhodes brothers as a team, and I kind of don't want to see them split. I've said that before. But I can see that happening as far as Elimination Chamber being planting the seeds for a split or just being a split period and kind of launching their feud into WrestleMania 30.
Hey, well, here's the thing. If Cody Rhodes would have landed that spot, the New Age Outlaws may not have won. So that was their game plan. So, you know, the New Age Outlaws won. That was great. The Rhodes brothers, you know, Cody wanted to land the moonsault. He didn't. Road Dogg was smarter that night, stepped out of the way, and said, "See you later, cowboy." So they walked out with the championships.
Yeah. We actually got a couple good questions here that I'll address. What are our thoughts on heels such as the New Age Outlaws and Triple H cutting babyface promos? Does it do more harm than good? I think that that's a fantastic question, and I tweeted about that, and I actually wrote that on last week's SmackDown review on WrestlingInc.com, so check out that SmackDown review on WrestlingInc.com from last week. Why in the world is the New Age Outlaws cutting babyface promo still? the whole ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, they're heels. They
turn it's awesome.
CM Punk. That's great. Not awesome because they're heels. They're
okay,
heels.
Shades
if they were
gray.
Baby faces, it would make no. There still has to be. I know that there's smarks out. You know, all of us are smarks out here, and we choose who we want to cheer for. But there still should be a distinction between a face and a heel. I think that tried and true way still works for pro wrestling. I know that there's a big gray area. There's a big cloudy area of face and heel, but it's still clear of who a face and a heel is. You can choose whoever you want to root for, but face and heel still exist. Now, why in the world would they turn heel against CM Punk, one of the biggest baby faces in the WWE, feud against a heel team, say a couple heel things, but still cut the babyface DX 1997 promo, 1998 promo, and
99.
I even saw the Road Dogg clap some hands going on SmackDown, going to the ring. Dude, you're not a babyface, and this should be a distinction. You're not a babyface. And it's so funny because every time they do the announcements, you can hear the boos and cheers from the crowd because they're like, boo, yay? I don't know. Am I supposed to boo? Am I supposed to cheer? Which one is correct? And I just don't think that should be allowed. As far as and I will say this, Triple H is even worse because the authority should be they should be heels. Period. They should be heels, and even especially if they're leading to a Daniel Bryan versus Triple H match on WrestleMania, Triple H should not do anything close to being a babyface promo. And the dude was even doing yes chants at the beginning of Raw. So I'm not a fan of that at all. You got to, especially your top heels, you got to keep them heel because the stronger you are as a heel, the bigger the culmination is when the baby face wins. And Booker T made a really good point a long time ago. He says the baby face always wins. And at the end of the day, the culmination is the baby face winning. And the heel is supposed to build the baby face up as much as possible and be as strong of a heel as possible. That's why I like Chris Jericho so much. I don't like the fact that he puts over everybody, but when he's a heel, he's a really good, strong heel, and he gets a lot of boos, and he builds up the baby face really good. And we need people like that. And Chris and Triple H doing anything babyface, especially this close to WrestleMania, very bad idea.
It's not the worst idea. Again, I like the shades of gray. So you got to get the pick. Who do you want to see go on? How do you want to see this story unfold? As far as New Age Outlaws smacking hands with everybody, and that, I'd give anything to be able to, you know, greet the New Age Outlaws and tell them how big of fans I am. Yeah, I mean, you can take perspective that, you know, now where it's 2014, New Age Outlaws are old school nobodies. But, come on, Chris Featherstone. You know how it goes. That's how we roll.
Yeah. Face and heel should be.
You know, come on. And you hate Jim Cornette. That's Jim Cornette philosophy.
Yeah, I told you I'm a traditionalist when it comes to that, man, you know, but, you know, I don't think they should be cheesy with it because 89 booking is you got the cheesy baby face and, you know, the really, really bad cheesy heel, you know. There should be some edginess that goes with both sides. I like a cocky heel and I like a rugged, no-nonsense baby face, but still make the distinction, though. I mean, that's what I'm all about. Got some really good questions here on Twitter at Crave Wrestling that I'll address. Another one says, what is the soonest you see Brock Lesnar getting a title shot? I would say a title shot, I would say probably a minor pay-per-view. I say that we see Batista, Lesnar. Yeah, you know what? I'll give you SummerSlam, because I think Batista, Lesnar at SummerSlam is what we're going to get. I don't want to see that personally. I totally do not want to see that match. Because again, I'm just not on board for Batista. However, I do think that Brock Lesnar may be the best option for Batista right now, and I don't want to see Batista have the title for that long. I don't want to see him have the title, period. But especially that long, that would be four and a half more months after WrestleMania. That would just be horrible. Because again, I think that Daniel Bryan should be money. He's the biggest money maker. He's the biggest person. He's the most over person. You should cha-ching off of that and make him champion. All right, another question we have. If Sting does sign with WWE, how would you book his initial debut? WrestleMania feud, authority figure, WWE Network figurehead. Great questions here. There's reports that they're thinking about making him a general manager of Raw. Totally no. Absolutely no. No. And
why would you make
everybody knows Sting, everybody knows that Sting is my all-time favorite wrestler, but I would not but you still got to keep the mystique. Having him on Raw every Monday as a general manager, that would get old fast. So I definitely wouldn't want to see him as general manager. WWE Network figurehead, absolutely. I mean, he's the face of WCW. He's the franchise of the – Derek, are you serious?
He's never been in the WWE. I'm serious. I would not make him a figurehead. I'd put him on SmackDown
listen to what the question was. It was WWE Network figurehead.
Yeah,
so you have to understand.
No way. You
have to understand.
I would not
Who's going to be the figurehead of WCW then?
Anybody else? Goldberg? I mean, if they want to put WCW on, I understand. So
Goldberg?
WWE Network. Why would you
Goldberg
put Sting?
Over
Sting?
Sting
has... Yeah. No, I don't think
you
he would
be
a great
kidding
head. He's never been WWE Network. He's WWE nothing. I mean, he's not... Yeah, put him on
with
the
network,
figurehead for WCW.
But the network has nothing to do with past WWE stars though.
Yeah.
The WWE network.
How many? That wouldn't do anything for Sting. I mean, that really wouldn't. I'd rather see Sting. If you're going to put Sting in the WWE family, whether it be network or anything, put him on Raw. I think a general manager would be okay.
No.
Yeah, you want to keep
no
the mystique. Yeah, do something. I mean, it's Sting, for crying out loud. He's one of the biggest names in wrestling.
I don't want to see Sting on
Raw.
No, not every week. You would put Gold... How does that logically make sense?
I didn't think of any other big name. What would you... Okay,
because there's no other big name. The other name would
Rufus.
Be Ric Flair. Rufus, yeah. I may give you that.
Okay.
But
if you're going to put Sting with WWE Network, put Sting on Monday Night Raw. I would like to see Sting on Monday Night Raw.
Okay.
I really would.
I think a lot of people would. So clearly you're not understanding the question. We're talking about the actual network that's launching a day after Elimination Chamber. We're talking about the actual
Network.
So there's going to be WCW footage. There's going to be hundreds and hundreds of hours of WCW footage on the WWE Network. And Sting needs to be the figurehead of the WWE Network because he was the franchise of WCW. When Ric Flair in 92 and 93 came over to WCW, guess who was still main eventing? When he came over to WWE, guess who was still main eventing WCW through the Jim Herd era?
Luger,
Yeah, Luger was, but Luger over Sting, no way.
No,
Sting's
I would.
A bigger name than Luger in any day.
If Sting's going to be on in the WWE family, he should be on WWE programming, on Raw, SmackDown, whatever. That's my opinion.
So Sting every week wouldn't get old?
It would get old for me because I'm not a Sting fan, but, I mean, the surprise of it would be okay. But I'm not saying I'm going to buy the WWE network, so I'm just speaking from a common man's person.
But we're talking about let's talk about a
I steered the question
objective
in this direction.
View here. Let's talk about an objective view here. So here's the thing. Sting comes to the WWE. Okay.
Yep.
Now the guy will be 55 years old next month. Okay, so there's not much left there when it comes to on-air television.
The icon, he can do anything.
Yeah, he can do anything, sure. This isn't 1994 all over again. But let's put this in perspective. The guy's almost 55 years old, and so you want to, I mean, Sting coming to the WWE at 55, he's going to have 2 years, 3 years to capitalize on whatever you want to do. I mean, he's still good in the ring. He's still good in the ring. You can't deny that. Sting's still good in the ring.
For
54 years old. He's better. He's one of the best 54-year-old wrestlers that anybody can ever see. We have to, again, we have to put this in perspective. Any other 54-year-old wrestler, they're wrestling in high school gyms right now, and their belly is as big as Pluto, and they're wrestling for $50. So come on now. We have to put this in perspective again. 54 years old, and the guy can still go. So, again, Sting Taker, that's, the dream match for WrestleMania. Personally, I wouldn't want that to happen, but, I understand the whole mystique, the whole anticipation for the dream match. So 31, we may have Sting versus The Undertaker. Again, I don't want it, but I understand the importance of having that dream match. It'll work. The bill would be great. So we have maybe a year or two left and Sting in the ring. As far as on-air personality, honestly, being my all-time favorite wrestler, I think that we will get Sting overkill if we see him every week on Raw, period. If he's a general manager, it's overkill. It's too much Sting. And it's very surprising for me to say that because I don't really believe in too much Sting, but the guy is almost 55 years old, man. This isn't 20 years ago. The older that you get and the closer you get to retiring, I think the less we should see you because that brings out the mystique. That brings out the excitement of seeing you again. That's why I'm totally in favor of The Undertaker wrestling one match a year. Totally in favor of that. He's paid his dues. He's been wrestling for 30 years almost, and I'm totally in favor of it. He deserves to wrestle one match a year because he's put hours and years into the business to have that luxury. So, and plus, the streak is still, again, the streak is popular. The streak is as popular as a world title match, and in some years it's even more popular than a world title match. So I'm all for it. I'm all for that type of feel for older wrestlers. And the thing is, The Undertaker, he's 48 years old now. He'll be 49 next month, and he'll still be maybe two WrestleManias, maybe three, because he has that ability because he's only wrestling one match a year. So, and by the way, he debuted in 1984, so he has been wrestling for 30 years. So great conversational thing, I definitely think. And last question real quick, any DVD concept out there WWE hasn't tackled yet that you would like to see? For example, a Cruiserweight DVD. I don't think I'm in favor of a Cruiserweight DVD. Maybe WWE's best Cruiserweights, but again, it would have to lead to something. Maybe a best Cruiserweights segment on the network, but as far as a full-on DVD, I don't know. Because the Cruiserweight division was really good in WCW, and of course they can use some of their footage, but the WWE Cruiserweight division just wasn't the best, to be honest with you. So, great questions from our Twitterverse here at Crave Wrestling. And real quick before we zoom through Raw, another trivia question. And that is, what show did Andre the Giant win the WWE Championship? What show did Andre the Giant win the WWE Championship? Next, we had Titus O'Neil defeating Zack Ryder. Throwaway match. For those who watched SmackDown, Titus O'Neil turned on Darren Young. I reported on Bleach on Wrestling.com the tout that Darren Young said that he's going to, you know, they're going to meet and he's going to get some retribution, but we didn't see any Darren Young. So that goes to show how much he may drop off the face of the earth because of the split. The primetime players should not have split, period. And that's what I'll say about that.
Yeah, they probably. It is what it is. Yeah, they split. I don't know if it's from the sudden media that he's been getting, but it just kind of happens. But one clarification I want to get on your trivia question: is it WWE Andre the Giant? When did he win the championship, or was it?
Yes, when did he win the WWE championship?
Okay. Can I answer it, or should I wait?
Go for it.
Third match main event?
Technically, no.
It was on Tuesday night, wasn't it?
No, it was called the main event at the time. It wasn't Saturday night's main event. It was main event because there was a string of times where
it
was not on Saturday.
Get out of here.
It was not on Saturday for a second. So in the main event, that was the technical name for the event. All right, next we got a dance off between Summer Rae and Emma. Of course, those who watch NXT knows about Emma. Emma's hilarious. I like it. I like the Emma Taining, Emma Lucian. It's going to be really interesting as far as that's concerned. Next we had Sheamus defeating Curtis Axel. Of course, we knew that was going to happen. Curtis Axel is just—he has solidified his spot. Afterthought is a compliment. He's solidified his spot in Jobberville. He has the keys to his apartment in Jobberville now, and he is a proud resident. Batista comes out to the ring. Alberto Del Rio comes out shortly after. The two have a verbal exchange. Then Del Rio attacks Batista and then retreats when Batista kicks him in the midsection. I see a Del Rio versus Batista match at Elimination Chamber. I did write an article in Bleacher Report about, you know, we shouldn't see this feud. And I'm still not a fan of the feud, but I guess as a holdover match, since Batista is going to WrestleMania as a challenger, as a number one contender for the title, I guess that they do want to see him on the card. So it looks like a filler match at Elimination Chamber between Batista and Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, what are you going to say about the two? We don't like Alberto Del Rio. We didn't really care for Batista.
True.
Elimination Chamber's already looking like a fail, just like the last 5 or 6 pay-per-views.
Yeah, well, SummerSlam was amazing, but...
That was the last pay-per-view that was worth anything.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That was what, 4 pay-per-views ago? September was...
August.
August. So September was Night of Champions. October was Battleground and Hell in a Cell. November was SummerSlam, and December was TLC. So it's been 5 pay-per-views of gunk.
Garbage.
So hopefully, Elimination Chamber will be different. We shall see. Next, we had Wyatt Family defeating Dolph Ziggler, R-Truth, and Xavier Woods. Again, 3 people who were just lambs to the slaughter, basically, just trying to push the Wyatt Family to, you know, have some steam going against the Shield, just like they did earlier in the show. Naomi defeating Asana. Real quick, I do want to address that just merciless knee strike that Asana gave Naomi. That was just brutal. And those are my 2 favorite divas, Naomi and Asana. Asana, you know, every time I see her, I think, I know I'm the best. When she said that weeks ago, I thought it was absolutely hilarious in her Lithuanian accent. And just it was a bit, I mean, Naomi's a really good athlete. Oksana's decent. She's getting better and better. But it was a sloppy match. It was definitely a sloppy match. And that knee strike was just, of course, that was not planned. And Naomi, you know, kudos to her. She's a trooper for taking that one, because that did not look like it felt anything other than very bad.
Yeah, it was bad. Divas match. Next.
Divas match. Come on, your commentary on Divas matches need to improve. But one of these days, very soon.
One of these days, I'm going to be impressed by the Divas division like I used to be. And I have a lot to say, but recently, and sorry, it just does not. But next match is decent.
I think the uprise of Naomi is good, though. AJ needs to drop the title. AJ needs to drop the title. And
AJ has the most talent as far as all around, as far as mic work, as far as, you know, what she does. But
yeah. She's
horrible with the title. I mean, it's lousy. It's bad booking again. But AJ Lee, to me, is still the prime ultimate diva. No one else really does yet, or at least it's not convincing.
Fair enough commentary there. Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton has some slow spots to me. Overall, was a good match, but I think that Daniel Bryan winning, to me, was good. However, it just poorly books Randy Orton. It was a double-edged sword to me, because I didn't want Randy Orton to win, but you still have to properly book any champion, no matter if you like them or not. You have to properly book the champion. And to have Randy Orton lose cleanly to Daniel Bryan, which, again, is, I mean, he's the biggest moneymaker right now. He's a treasure chest for the WWE. But just booking this match and having Randy Orton lose cleanly to Daniel Bryan after losing a few weeks ago cleanly to Kofi Kingston, man, they are really poorly booking this guy. And we had a distraction from Kane. I really hope that this doesn't lead to Kane versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, because Daniel Bryan is already booked for Elimination Chamber. So I just... Because, of course, CM Punk quits and he walks out. Next week we'll address, you know, time permitting, we'll address, you know, how we feel about that. But it looks like CM Punk versus Kane was pretty much on deck for Elimination Chamber. Daniel Bryan is in the Chamber match, so I don't know if they're trying to get Daniel Bryan out to go against Kane. To be honest with you, I'd actually prefer that, because Daniel Bryan doesn't have a shot of winning the title in the actual match. So him having a filler match at Elimination Chamber against Kane and beating Kane, getting more momentum to WrestleMania, would be better for me because I just don't see Daniel Bryan winning. So I just don't want to see this match at WrestleMania. I don't want to see Daniel Bryan and Kane at WrestleMania at all.
No, of course you don't. Daniel Bryan, like you said, is the moneymaker right now, and they're just totally misusing him. They have for so long. I mean, it was like 10 months ago. I mean, he still is the guy, and they just keep trying to push him down. I don't know what they're trying to do with him. He's like a jack in a box. When's this guy just going to explode and get the title? So I'm on board.
So that's a very good analogy as far as him being a jack in a box for sure. Again, SmackDown and Impact Wrestling, we have on wrestling.com. I write my weekly reviews every weekend. SmackDown has some good moments on there. Like I said, the primetime players break up, and Cody Rhodes defeats Road Dogg. That was a good match. And then Christian's return as well. And then the Shield got some momentum by defeating Sheamus, Daniel Bryan, and Rey Mysterio. So that was very interesting, three people to beat. And then, of course, as far as Impact Wrestling is concerned, like I said, they were in Glasgow, Scotland, had a great crowd. Had a very good crowd, actually. I was very impressed with that. Had some good matches. We had Madison Rayne and Velvet Sky defeating Gail Kim and Lady Tapa. Chris Sabin comes out and Velvet Sky makes the decision to break up with Chris Sabin. James Storm and Gunner, they make amends in the ring. That was a very passionate promo when Gunner was talking about his time in the military, and it was really good. And I was surprised because I was expecting a heel turn. I'm still not totally away from the thought that we'll probably see a heel turn. I see it more in James Storm that's going to turn than Gunner is. But we shall see whether this will this is the amend-making moment that will just make them both baby faces still, or if we'll actually see a big turn coming soon. And then we had them defeat Bad Influence, which is more of a jobber tag team now, which is horrible because those are two of the best wrestlers in TNA, and just not really liking how they're what they're doing with them. And there's even rumors that they may not even get their contract renewed. So don't necessarily know why that is the case. I think that's just a horrible idea because they're two fantastic, fantastic wrestlers. But similar to AJ Styles, they will have a pretty good spot in ROH. And with Jeff Jarrett, you know, potentially basically starting a new promotion. It's not official yet, but it's pretty much a lock. They'll probably have a good spot there as well. Then we saw Rockstar Spud calling out the Wolves, demands the identity of the investor, and then we got some actual action from the Wolves. Big fan of the Wolves. Total big fan of the Bulls. I was a big fan of them ROH when they were the American Wolves. And then the Abyss and Eric Young situation, that was really weird. That was just a weird build for a heel turn from Abyss. That was just weird. Bully Ray and more action between Bully Ray and Anderson that leads to a coffin match. Samoa Joe gets his number one contendership by teaming up with Kurt Angle, defeating Magnus in EC3. Whoever got the win from the babyface team was able to become the number one contender. So I think that it's well-deserved of Samoa Joe getting that spot, long overdue. And then the TNA investor is revealed, and it is MVP, which I think is a great idea. He's going to be a good fit in the in TNA, and hopefully we'll see some more revival in the weeks to come. I think this is a, I think this is an upswing for TNA, and I'm holding on, and I really hope that they continue this upswing, because they'll be in the UK. They're still in the UK as far as touring, and we'll see more from them in the UK the next coming weeks leading to lockdown. So I think that that's a good idea leading to their one of their biggest pay-per-views of the year. WrestleMania 3, Derek, here we go. We start off with the Can-Am Connection. 12 matches at WrestleMania 3. It was such a stacked card, man. Just an amazingly stacked card. We had the Can-Am Connection defeating Bob Orton and the Magnificent Morocco. We had Billy Jack Haynes and Hercules going to a double countout. That mixed tag team match with King Kong Bunny, Little Tokyo, and Lord Littlebrook losing by disqualification against Little Beaver, the Haiti Kid, and good old Hillbilly Jim. The Loser Must Bow match with Harley Race and the Junkyard Dog, which I just definitely wasn't happy that Junkyard Dog lost that match. But and then the Dream Team defeats the Russo Brothers, Fabulous Russo's brothers. Then the Hair versus Hair match when Adrian Adonis lost against Roddy Piper. That six-man match when Danny Davis and the Heart Foundation defeats Tito Santana and the British Bulldogs. That's when Danny Davis was wearing the stripes. Then Butch Reed defeats Coco Beware. And then Randy Savage losing to Ricky Steamboat, losing his Intercontinental Championship, which was almost a 15-minute match. Arguably the best match in WrestleMania history. Honky Tonk Man beating Jake Roberts. And, of course, remember that Jake Roberts was with Alice Cooper. And, of course, Jimmy Hart was with Honky Tonk Man. Iron Sheik and Nikita and Nikolai Volkoff beating the Killer Bees by disqualification. And then, of course, the colossal match, the Irresistible Force meeting the Immovable Object with Hulk Hogan defeating Andre the Giant.
Absolutely one of the best WrestleMania on paper, I think. And when you have Gorilla Monsoon, you have Jesse the Body Ventura giving commentary, it makes it that much better. Bob Uecker was absolutely phenomenal. Celebrity,
yeah.
You have the biggest match in wrestling history as far as the build-up goes. And, I mean, the mid-cards, I mean, absolutely, there was not a stinker in that whole WrestleMania. Billy Jack Haynes and the Mighty Hercules in a double countout. But it was a full Nelson match. You just
That was a good feud, too.
Every match was almost like a gimmick match. But it was just so, it worked. It was awesome. You'll never have that again. You'll never see a WrestleMania or a pay-per-view like that again. Just the build-up behind the whole thing was just absolutely WWE at its best.
Very well said. I totally agree. Then we get the tournament, WrestleMania 4. We get the 20-man Battle Royal starts off. Bad News Brown wins that. Speaking of Ghetto Blaster.
Ghetto Blaster.
And then we get the glorified Enziguri. Then we get the tournament matches. We get the first-round matches. We get Dugan losing against Ted DiBiase. We get Don Morocco. We get Don Morocco defeating Dino Bravo by disqualification. Greg Valentine defeating Ricky Steamboat, which I wasn't happy with that, being a big Ricky Steamboat fan. One Man Game beating Bam Bam Bigelow. And then Rick Rude and Jake Roberts match was a time limit draw. That was a really good match, by the way. I remember watching that match. Yeah. And then we get Hercules losing against Tuckzilla, which was very odd.
Yeah.
And then quarterfinal matches, we got Hogan and Andre, disqualification. So and then we saw Hogan come out with Randy Savage later on that night. Ted DiBiase defeating Don Morocco. Randy Savage defeating Greg Valentine, and Beefcake defeating Honky Tonk Man by disqualification for the Intercontinental Championship. There was a couple times where Beefcake could have won the Intercontinental Championship. They didn't go for that. They didn't ignite that or decide to initiate that run at all with Beefcake being Intercontinental Championship. I remember he was feuding with Perfect as well. He could have won the Intercontinental Championship, but I guess they didn't want Beefcake to win it, interestingly enough.
No, you can't compare Beefcake to Perfect. No way.
Yeah, but Beefcake would have been a good Intercontinental Champion at the time. Beefcake was way over in the late 80s. Come on now. You can't deny the fact that in 89, 88.
As far as wrestling caliber, wrestling know-how.
No, Beefcake doesn't have it. I mean, Perfect will run circles around Beefcake as far as wrestling is concerned. But as far as being over, I mean, you know, hey.
He was.
Who's over makes the money. That's all that matters in many cases. And Beefcake was way over, but they didn't decide to make him Intercontinental Championship. Oddly enough, Islanders defeating the British Bulldogs. What was Islanders? It was a six-man match. Islanders and Bobby Heenan defeating the Bulldogs and Coco Beware. Another Coco Beware loss.
Matilda.
Randy Savage defeating with the British Bulldogs. Randy Savage and Roman Gang. Savage beating One Man Gang by disqualification in the semifinals. And then the tag team championship saw Strikeforce losing to Demolition. And then the tournament final match was Randy Savage defeating Ted DiBiase. That's probably the pinnacle moment for DiBiase. That was probably his best. I would say that's his biggest moment, was losing in the finals to Randy Savage. And you can actually say that Ted DiBiase main evented at WrestleMania.
Oh yeah, of course he deserves it. And almost WrestleMania 4 was kind of a continuation of WrestleMania 3, as far as that kind of mid 80s era goes. So, and it was a great follow up to WrestleMania 3. I mean, they really knocked it out of the park. Again, you had the great celebrity guests. And just Randy Savage, that was his moment. Hulk Hogan was involved, of course. But it was like WrestleMania 5 was a lot different than WrestleMania 4 and WrestleMania 3. So that was kind of like the end of the first era of the WWE to go on into 90s WrestleMania. But, again, awesome WrestleMania. A great, great follow-up to what they had at WrestleMania 3.
Indeed. Very well said again. Great, great commentary, as always, Derek. Again, check out next week. Got some awesome, awesome, awesome news in store for you. 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket. You're really going to need that number coming up in the next couple weeks. Trivia questions that are going to lead into some – just stay tuned. We got a lot of things in store for you that you don't want to miss out on. Crave Wrestling, Pancakes and Power Slams, 97 episodes in the archives. Follow at Crave Wrestling. Check me out on the Bleacher Report, as always, and WrestlingGame.com. I will just continue to share my world, share my mind in wrestling. And next week, 98 episodes. We've got a big announcement for everyone. So stay tuned next week and flood this chat room. If you think that you're good enough to answer trivia questions, come on through with...
Yeah, you're not. You're probably not,
the chat
so forget it. Just listen and
well,
be happy.
Listen
to the masters at play.
I want you to prove Derek wrong. Come and flood this chat room and check out the just check out the trivia every week and just stay tuned. 100 episode coming up. Until next week. Have a fantastic week and enjoy your week of wrestling. And God bless. Goodbye.